Hi, everyone. I'm attorney Donna DiMaggio Berger, and this is Take It to the Board, where we speak condo and HOA. Today, I'm going to be speaking with Marcy Gershoni, the president of Community Cable Consultants. Marcy is an experienced cable professional, having worked as an account executive for one of the largest cable providers and then in the cable consulting field for the past 5 years. During Marcy's time at Comcast, she recognized the need for volunteer board members to partner with a knowledgeable consultant who can assist them in navigating and negotiating the most beneficial cable and internet agreements for their communities. Marcy has been involved with the telecommunications industry from both sides of the aisle, the provider and the consumer. She also has 2 decades of experience with the construction industry, which provides her with yet another layer of understanding of the infrastructure and technology associated with cable, internet, and phone service. So, Marcy, welcome to Take It to the Board.
Thank you, Donna, for inviting me on to talk about this important subject.
I want to say at the outset, Marcy, that I am not knowledgeable about all the bells and whistles. So during this episode, I'm hoping to learn a few new things myself. Like most people, I want to turn the TV on and I want to see my favorite show, right?
Of course.
So as an attorney representing condominiums, cooperatives, and HOAs, a lot of bulk telecommunications contracts are sent to me by clients, Marcy. And while my colleagues and I review those agreements for the legal terms, I leave the evaluation of the business terms up to an expert like you. So let's start with the basics. What do most boards look for when they are evaluating a bulk telecommunications contract? Are they looking just at the pricing, the channel lineup, internet speed, all of the above, something I didn't mention?
Well, actually, really all of the above. So it's really a package deal. When you do a bulk program, you're essentially committing the entire community to a certain level of service. So you want to make sure that you're providing the right level of services to the residents. So one of the first things that we do is we do a penetration report, which will let the board or the committee know what people are purchasing on their own. Because one of the biggest issues is that these retail bills are so high. You see these bulk agreements and they're asking for a certain amount, $30 or $40 or $50 or $60 a month. And yet on top of that, a lot of people are paying bills well over $100 to add on to those services. So I would say saving money on the bulk portion, providing more value, but also helping the residents save money off of their personal bills are a big consideration today.
Who are you normally working with, Marcy? Are you working with directly with the board? Are you working with a committee? Are you working with the manager?
Well, so, you know, all of the above typically will be brought in either by a management company or a board member that met us or knew somebody whose association we worked on in the past. But today, because a big part of the consideration is the infrastructure, very often they'll set up cable committees because a committee has the time and the energy to really look at a broader picture and to do site visits, to look at other communities, to see how their infrastructure looks. Because that's one of the big changes today is looking at adding fiber optics. So it's a much bigger consideration than in the past where you're just negotiating terms.
Is it easy to work with committees? You know that old saying about what's a camel, a horse designed by committee?
So I actually really like working with committees because I feel like they're very committed to making certain that they cover all the bases. A lot of time, as you know, board members have so much on their plate that they really don't have the ability to really focus and take the time to look at all the considerations. So typically a committee will have a board liaison. So I just did a very large property. They had the board liaison happen to be the board president. And we met for close to a year on a weekly basis, but we really covered everything. And I think they made a great choice in the end because they had the information they needed.
Well, that will actually be very useful. Let's talk about that. So you were working for a year to help a community negotiate a bulk telecommunications contract. Is that correct?
Negotiate, yes, but also to figure out what they felt was in the best interest of their community, to look at all the available providers, because there are a lot of providers in the marketplace today, many, many more than in the past.
Yeah, I want to talk to you about that, the evolution of competition. But in terms of this community, to use it as almost like a textbook example, was it a condo, a co-op, or a HOA?
It was a large golf community. It was an HOA, a little over 1,600 homes. they had a lot of sub-communities within the community. So it was complicated because we had to look at, you know, different types of construction. Some were single family, some were condo. And, you know, not only looking at the providers, they also wanted to see how the construction portion would be handled. So that's where the committee was really helpful, because we had a few committee members that had the time and energy to actually go on about half a dozen site visits. So they really understood what they were going to be taking on for the community.
Did any of the committee members have any expertise in the telecommunications industry?
A little bit, yeah. I mean, you tend to find that committee members are people that either have experience in the industry or have an interest. So sometimes an interest is just as good because they're very open-minded and they want to learn.
And I imagine your construction background, which I mentioned during the opening, came into play, because part of what you're telling me is, how do we lay this out, right? How are we going to install? What's it going to look like?
Right. So it's a project. You know, when you do a new project from the ground up and you're putting fiber optics in, you're obviously building that fiber network without having construction on site. So it's very clean and easy. When you're putting fiber optics into a building, whether it's a condominium or homeowners association to private homes, you're working around existing infrastructure. So you have to get around the trees and the driveways and the streets. So it is a more involved process. And yes, having a background in construction was helpful and is helpful. But really, it's just knowing the industry. And I've actually been doing this for a little bit longer than 5 years. So just having that, you know, time in the industry has helped.
So assume I know nothing about how to install, which is not a leap, as I said. How is it installed? Tell us how fiber optic was installed in that community you helped.
Well, they actually haven't gone through the rebuild yet, but what will happen is the company that they selected already has fiber on the street. They will then run that fiber optics into each home. Well, actually to a major hub within the community. And then from there, individual strands of fiber will be run to each resident, brought into the resident through a common area, and then the fiber will terminate inside the home, and typically the services are wireless from there. So a rebuild today does not require the same level of running wires through a home that it did in the past, which is why it is so popular. You probably know that we're working on a few properties together. I know that you're reviewing contracts for several of my clients too, and they are all seem to be migrating to fiber.
So minimally invasive these days, but you still need access. Any issue? And I'll give you my own perspective on this. Any issues with owners who refuse to allow the workers to come in and drill the necessary holes for the wires?
You know, it's funny, very limited, except that we were doing this through COVID. So that was really a very interesting time to be trying to get into people's units. But in general, no, people are very appreciative of the fact that their unit's being upgraded, and they want the services that are being included with the new program. So very rare that someone will not let them in to do the upgrade.
That's interesting. You said during COVID, you're right. I had that come up, but at the same time, people were pretty much shut in. So what did they need the most to stay connected? They needed their in, they needed the internet, they needed their cable, they needed their streaming services. So Marcia, you've mentioned fiber. Is that the state of the art right now, or is there something better on the market?
Fiber to the home seems to be the direction that almost all of the condominiums and HOAs are going. Sometimes they don't do it now. They just plan for it in the future. But I'd say probably about 50% of my clients are going to a new fiber build out for their community. So it's very prevalent.
So what does fiber do that its predecessor didn't?
It depends on how good the wiring is at the property. If the wiring is good at the property today, it's not really so much that the services today will change. It's just that it future-proofs the community. It provides symmetrical internet speeds. It has unlimited capability. As more programming is done in 4K and, you know, requiring more bandwidth, they'll be prepared in the future to be able to utilize those services. If you have a really older property with bad wiring, it could be life-changing, because you can go from having very poor service to excellent, you know, internet that you can use for anything that you want, and a great television picture, where a lot of people have pixelation if the wiring is old. So it just depends on the state of the current infrastructure.
What about protection from the elements? You know, we have a 6-month hurricane season here in Florida. Is fiber seen to be a little more resilient?
Oh, absolutely, Donna. And it's also much more protected. So fiber is buried in conduit on the property. It's not going to be cut by a landscaper. It doesn't need equipment or repeaters. So it's definitely more reliable, and it is definitely protected much better from the elements than the old coaxial systems were, for sure.
You know, I said at the outset, I get these contracts all the time. My colleagues here at Becker get them all the time. I tell the clients this: yes, we're going to negotiate the legal terms and make sure that the contract has the legal terms that are needed to protect the association. But in terms of evaluating channel lineup, door fees, and all of that, they need a consultant. Now, for some of my clients, they understand that, they knew it, and they were one step ahead of me. They had already hired you or another consultant. But for others, they don't even know that you exist, that services like consultants exist out there. What can you do for them that they couldn't do for themselves?
Well, first of all, a good consultant has had a lot of experience. I've worked on over 1,000 properties, so I really know what the deal points are. I've been fortunate enough to work with some of the largest associations in the state where there are 5,000, 6,000, 7,000, 8,000 units. So I certainly know how low the pricing will go for a very large client. And we try to take that aggressive pricing for all of our clients, because really everyone wants to pay the lowest rate and get the best services. There's just a lot to know today. It's not like in the past where someone would just sort of negotiate how many boxes do they want and what channel lineup. There is a lot to know. There's technology clauses that should be included that I'm sure you see in some of the contracts that you review. Installation, you have to negotiate the installation and the timing of the installation. You know, with Florida being very seasonal, if you get a free installation, but it's only good for 90 days, which most boards or committees wouldn't even know to think about, then people come back and they could get hit with an installation fee, common area, free services that you want. And then like flexibility. One of the big things is if you are going to go to fiber, they are going to be a longer term contract, as you I'm sure have seen. And if you have flexibility in that contract, then it's not that scary, because if you can add or detract services at pre-negotiated rates, then that gives you a big advantage. You're not at the mercy of the cable provider if things do change.
Well, let's talk about that. So what is the average length of a contract for fiber? I realize that the provider has to make back their investment, right? But in terms of what they've installed, but what's the average length of time for fiber contract?
So most of the providers will ask for 10 years, and that's part of what a consultant will do. We'll try to negotiate a shorter time frame. In my case, I've been able to negotiate 7 years where 10 was initially asked for. But again, if you can negotiate like predetermined ins and outs, like for instance, I'll have some associations that are very comfortable with a 10-year agreement as long as they know midway they can drop the cable portion, because cable is really what's changing. Everyone kind of feels confident that they're going to want the internet in 5 or 6 or 7 or 8 years, but they don't want to sign a long-term cable agreement. So we always try to put those ins and outs into the agreement, which I'm sure, again, you've seen as you're reviewing the.
Even though 7 years seems like a very long term when you're dealing with technology. I mean, overnight, we went from coaxial to fiber. What's next? I mean, in a year, we don't know. Something entirely different.
Well, coaxial's been in the ground and serving the communities for probably 50 plus years. Everyone that I know feels like fiber optics will be there for the next 20 to 30 years as a predominant force. And you need fiber for information, for bandwidth to travel. So it's not like a fiber network is going to be something that you're not going to need a couple of years from now. It's expensive and it's a project, and you're not going to want to be negotiating a new fiber contract every 3 or 4 years. And it would be way too expensive. You know, the boards and the committee and the residents wouldn't want to pay the rates that they'd have to pay. So that's why these agreements are long-term. But again, if you have technology clauses in the agreement that allow you to get upgrades as new technology becomes available, then really you're very protected.
So to build into the technology upgrades, would that be at a predetermined price point?
Absolutely. Everything has to be predetermined, because again, you don't want to be negotiating with a provider that you've already signed a contract with. But like, for instance, increases in internet speed. That's very important. You can sign today for 500 megabit symmetrical and think you're getting a fantastic speed, and you are, but that may not be a fantastic speed 2 years from now. So you want to have increases built into the agreement, and you want to have other technology clauses so that as things become available, you have the right to have access to that at a predisposed cost.
Well, that's a great segue into the question I wanted to ask you, which is, do you stay in touch with your clients after you've negotiated and they've signed on? And let's say they've got a 7-year contract. Let's say they're 4 years in. The volunteer board, even the manager, is not likely to know what the market has in terms of technology. Do they reach back out to you and say, hey, you know, has anything changed in terms of offerings, technology? So do you stay in touch with your clients?
I certainly do. And I'd say most good consulting groups do, and not really just on a 4-year basis, but we're constantly in touch with our communities. And certainly when things happen that are an opportunity, like when AT&T Fiber came into the marketplace about 5 years ago, if you remember when they were doing a lot of fiber build outs for free, I brought that to all of my communities, even if they were in the middle of agreements, because it didn't matter. Legally, they were allowed to bring the AT&T fiber optics in. So yes, we definitely stay in touch. And remember, boards change and managers change. So it's really important that you stay in touch with your clients. And also for renewals, I'm working on several very large renewals where this is the third time that I've negotiated on behalf of the association. And you're not going to do that unless you're in touch with them on a regular basis.
So Marcy, what kind of leverage does an association actually have when it comes to negotiating favorable deal points, as you say?
So first of all, you have to have knowledge, right? So the biggest leverage comes with knowing what you need to get and what's a good price and what's a fair program. But there's tremendous leverage today. It's not like in the past, Donna, where you had, you know, two or three providers and that was it. Some cases, one provider choice and you really had very little leverage. Today, it is a very, very competitive marketplace and associations have a tremendous amount of negotiating power, especially honestly, if they have somebody like myself or another consulting group that really knows what to negotiate for and what's out there and available.
But I would imagine, and correct me if I'm wrong, that if you're dealing with a 5,000 lot HOA, they're going to have a little more leverage than a 20 unit condo.
That is 100% correct. Absolutely. Because there's a cost, right, to bringing services in. However, you know, we try to be an equalizer. So if I know that my 2,000 unit property just got a rate of $69 and I'm working with a 200 unit property and they're trying to give them a $79 rate, at least we know that a $69 rate's available and we'll try to get as close to that for the smaller client as well.
Oh, that makes sense. So what are some of the terms that people wouldn't even think to ask for, but you tell them? You mentioned the technology upgrades. Anything else that the average person looking to, you know, evaluate a bulk telecom contract wouldn't even think to ask for?
Well, I think the flexibility is very important. So I've negotiated on behalf of associations that did not want to add internet at this moment in time. They felt that they didn't have the ability to add that into the budget. But we knew going in that 2 years from now, they might regret that decision. So we have put in clauses where at a certain rate after year one and after year two, they can add the internet in. Same thing with, as we talked about earlier, dropping the video. You know, a lot of times the big companies will come out and just give you a flat service. You know, here it is, 5 years, 10 years, no changes. So most people are used to that and they're not used to asking how it can be maneuvered and changed based on, you know, what's happening today in the market. I would also say common area. It's amazing to me when I see how many of these associations are actually paying a bill for the office or for the pool area. So I have to just assume that they didn't try to negotiate that because I know that that's available and that you can get those services for free.
Right, right. And maybe even in places where they're paying for service where they're not receiving service, right?
Absolutely. So you might have areas that should have Wi-Fi and could have gotten Wi-Fi as part of the negotiation, but just don't have it. I do a lot of really high-end condominiums on the beach, and they love to have Wi-Fi available on the beach. And there's a cost to get that Wi-Fi to the beach, so they don't even necessarily know to ask for it because it's just not a very common thing. So yes, you're 100% right that it's really important to know everything that you're entitled to or could get.
That's a great point. I mean, nowadays, we just assume that we're going to have Wi-Fi everywhere we need it, right? Even in some of our older buildings where they've got common laundry facilities, people still want to watch their shows on their phone or their iPad or be texting or whatever while they're, you know, doing laundry. So basically, that is a really important point is in terms of the coverage area.
No, it absolutely is. And look, knowing the channel lineups is also very important because you can be negotiating with two different providers and their channel lineups may be very different. And that difference could be really important to your residents. So if there are certain shows that people really like Turner Classic Movies, and it's in one provider's program and it's not in the other, then that can make a big difference, because then you have people that will have to upgrade, you know, $15 or $20 on their own if we don't negotiate to get that included.
So do you recommend surveying the membership? I'm afraid to even ask this question because, you know, as we sit here, you know how long I've been representing associations, and I know you have too. We know that we're not going to make everybody happy, right? There's been people arguing that today is not Tuesday with us when, by the way, we're taping on Tuesday, December 13th. But that being said, do you recommend putting a survey out before the final, you know, the final contract signed, so you get a feel of what, you know, what kind of channels most people want to see in the package?
I actually do. And for several reasons. One, we talked earlier about penetrations. So the first thing I do for an association is try to get the penetration information from the provider as to what people are willing to pay for. But that doesn't necessarily mean that's a full picture, right? There may be services people really want, but they're just not willing to pay for. So if you send out a survey and you can get some information from the community, it always helps to get the best possible program. It also helps to get buy-in. So you send out a survey and people answer, and then some people don't answer. Well, those people that don't answer are usually the first ones to start complaining once a board makes a decision. So it's really good to be able to say we reached out, we tried to get as much information, and we acted on that information. And that's what we did at this big property that I mentioned earlier. They were very proactive about reaching out to the community. And at the end of the day, the end result was a program that was what the community asked for. So I think it's very important.
I mean, we have generational gaps, even in our 55 and over communities, where we've got younger, you know, we've got people in their mid 50s up to the 70s, and then we've got people 80s, 90s and beyond. We even have generational gaps in those in housing for older persons, let alone, I'm thinking, you know, your typical high rise that's so diverse, and you've got people wanting all different things. So I can imagine that's an interesting part of the process. But I wanted to ask you, do you have a metric or a checklist by which you can evaluate, Marcy, what's being offered against what you know what's out there that's possible?
Certainly. I mean, we certainly know what's out there. And what we do is we put together a comparative matrix for our properties. And that is so important because you really need to compare apples to apples to apples, or you will get completely confused and probably make a decision that could have been avoided, that might have been a better decision. So what we do is we try to line up the program so that the board members or committee members can really evaluate what they're looking at. And that's something that's pretty detailed, and we know what to ask for, and we know what's common in the marketplace. So we don't let things go too off the charts, because you really have to be able to do a comparison to know what is the most valuable program.
Well, that makes sense. So without naming names here, are there some companies that are a lot easier to deal with than others?
There are definitely providers that are more community friendly, right? So some have been in the marketplace for a long time and they're used to doing business a certain way. And then there are companies that are coming in that are trying to gain market share, and they are more flexible. But I think what's happened in this market is it has gotten so competitive that all of the providers are a lot more flexible than they were in the past. And there's a lot more that associations can gain than what they might have gotten the last time around. And that's why it's so important really to understand all the options in the market and what's out there. And that's where I really feel a consultant helps the most, is just having that knowledge, because sitting there, an average board member really would have no idea, first of all, how many providers there are, which are the best ones, which ones have fiber in their area. There's just a lot to look at.
Everybody knows the big names, but you're telling me that there's a lot more competition. And I want to ask you about the evolution of that competition, because I remember, you know, for years, there was just a lot of consult. There weren't that many companies. You know, it was almost like with the, you know, I had Todd Schwartz from Connections Elevator on the show a few episodes back. And it was the same thing in his industry. Everybody named two or three names, the big names, and they have no idea how many other companies out there that are willing to bring service. So tell us a little bit about that evolution. who made it happen to bring more offerings into Florida? And does the Florida market, in your opinion, kind of mirror what's going on elsewhere in the country?
So that's a really interesting question. By the way, I listened to that episode that you just mentioned. It was really informative for me, too. And I was able to pass some of that information along to a few of my associations. I would say that the Florida market is probably one of the most competitive. It's the largest bulk market, in the country, maybe just following Texas. So because of that, these bulk contracts are worth a lot of money, right? They're multi-million dollar contracts in some cases. So that attracts, you know, providers. So you have a tremendous number of providers, good quality providers in this market. I could probably think of 7 or 8 off the bat that you would know that are household names today, because a lot of associations are using them, that provide good service. Whereas, as we said in the past, you might have had just 2 or 3, if that. So Florida is a very, very competitive market with a lot of very top quality providers with their own fiber systems.
So let's talk about the thing most of my boards want to talk about, which is door fees and how much they're going to get paid. And so my question to you is, what makes a community, is every community eligible to receive door fees in connection with a bulk contract? And should every community push to receive them?
So door fees are a funny thing. So yes, every community should be eligible. Some of the providers, some of the ones that have been around the longest, will put number tags on it. So if you're less than this many numbers, you don't get an offer for a door fee, which I don't think is very fair. But door fees are pretty much available. And I believe that they are a great help, because sometimes, especially today, communities are adding services. So let's say they're bulk contract ends in June and they're adding a internet program. So their rate is going up by $25. Of course, they're going to save their residents a ton of money, right? But they have to figure out, where does that $25 come from, you know, from June to the end of the year. So the door fee can help to offset that increase. It can also go to use, you know, for other things that people are needing it for, you know, communities are needing it for today. But it is a small part of what they're negotiating. If you miss one box or one service that would cost the residents $10, and you multiply that out over a long-term agreement, that door fee looks very small in comparison. So we personally like to negotiate the door fee last, so that the provider doesn't try to put it, you know, put that money somewhere else. Let's get the lowest rate. Let's get the most services. Let's get the most flexibility, get as much value as we can, and then hit them for the door fee to be a little bit higher at the end, because that's an easy thing for them to agree to.
So for somebody who's listening and doesn't know what a door fee is, can you explain it very simply?
Sure. A door fee is what's called like a signing bonus. It's usually a per unit fee. So if you have a 1,000-unit property and you got a $100 door fee, you would get $100,000 written as a check to you. So it can be a big number if you have a big community, but typically it's really just what's called a signing bonus, as a nice name for it.
And just an extra little gift. Actually, Marcy, for some of my very large senior housing communities, where we're talking 6,000 plus, they've had some really nice door fees. And as you can imagine, their owners are very, very appreciative and interested in getting large door fees.
Absolutely. I don't want you to think $100 is common. It's not. It's a very low door fee. I'm representing right now 2 different associations that are both 5,000 and up in terms of numbers. And the door fees have never been higher. Again, because it's so competitive, they're, you know, sometimes getting millions of dollars up front, which is very nice for sure.
So, you know, I can't have you on the podcast on this episode without mentioning streaming services, right? Streaming services now are just so, they're everywhere. They're omnipresent. How have they impacted cable deals? Because I have to imagine they have. I will tell you, most of what I watch, I do watch some on cable, but I watch an awful lot on streaming services. So is bulk cable still a good deal with all the other options out there and with the advent of streaming services?
So it's really interesting. I've seen some articles that talk about how bulk is actually increasing, because streaming is very expensive, right? So if you want to have several streaming services, you're going to pay a lot more than you are for a really good quality bulk television package. So again, it depends on the community. It depends on the age of the residents, but a lot of residents still want to have a really solid cable program that has the shows that they like to watch, where it's incorporated for maybe a $30 or $35 fee versus having to get a bunch of different streaming services. Also, there are people that just like that old cable box. You know, they just, that's their comfort level. But I would say that the internet is becoming probably the most important service. And I guess moving into the future, it will become even more so, because you're right. At some point, it may be cheaper to just buy the three stations you want and watch, you know, than a $35 cable program. But for right now, cable, especially if you get a really good program, and we've negotiated some fantastic programs for some of those larger communities where they are just getting so much more than they were getting before, like stations that they all like to watch or sports stations that they're interested in. And this way, it's all included in a package for them. They don't have to pay separately.
I imagine we're going to see consolidation with streaming services like we saw in other industries, right? There has to be. There's just too many options. I mean, I know Disney Plus tried to consolidate. I imagine we're seeing some consolidation, but do you think there's going to be a lot more of it?
You know, that's a business question that I really don't have the answer to, but I will say that all of the broadcasters think that their programs are the best, should be the most expensive, get the best return. So that's really the problem, is that everyone wants to get such a top dollar for their programming that I don't know. I don't know the answer to that, if they will be willing to compromise, but it does bring up an important point, which is there are broadcast fees that some of the providers will pass on to the end user, which is the association, in a bulk contract. And this is so critical. And it goes back to the question you asked earlier about what people won't think to negotiate. And that is making sure that their rates are capped. You don't want to get into a contract where the provider, whichever provider you select, can pass along increases to your association, because then you'll never have a set amount that you're paying, and you'll find out you're going to pay way too much. So that's a really important one, is capping the broadcast fee that the provider can pass along to you.
You all heard that here from Marcy. Thank you, Marcy. When it comes to streaming, what I'm forced to do in some cases, and I'm sure a lot of our listeners do the same, is if there's a show I want to see, I have to subscribe. And then after the show finishes, you cancel. But you find yourself doing that a couple times a year, depending on what comes out.
Or you don't cancel, and then you find yourself continuing to pay because you're just too busy.
I'm not good with it. My husband reminds me. Did you cancel that? Yes. Okay. Thank you. I'm going to cancel that now. But yeah, it would be nice if this was a little more streamlined. What are the developers doing with new construction down here in terms of the bulk contracts?
So developers typically will either have two options for the residents to select from and not do a bulk at all, or they'll do an internet bulk. It's kind of unusual, I think, today to have a developer come in and actually pick a television package for a community, although I'm sure that it happens. The one thing I wanted to piggyback on to what we were just talking about is, if you do this right and you negotiate a good program, you can, for the $70 range, I'm just using an approximate, have a great cable package. You can have a couple of boxes with voice remote controls. You can have the wireless router included. You can have a really good, fast, symmetrical internet speed. So when you think about the value that that represents, to answer your earlier question, I think these programs are going to be around for a while, because if you did just have just the internet, which, as we're talking about, developers typically tend to do, then that leaves people to spend a lot more on their cable and video programming.
Right, because now the cable provider knows that they're only negotiating one piece of the pie, correct?
Well, it's because the internet would be a bulk service potentially, but then the video would be bought at retail. So if you wanted to buy a package, a retail package from any of these providers, it would typically be far more. Bulk is usually about 65 to 70% off retail. So imagine you want this TV package that has all your favorite stations. If you get it in a bulk, it might be $30. And if you were to buy it retail, it could be $90-something. So it's a big difference in the cost.
I want to talk about retail versus bulk. Back in 2006, 2007, during the recession, particularly Miami-Dade was hit hard with this, Marcy. We had some communities where they had delinquencies in excess of 60-70% because the units were owned, mostly investor-owned. The recession hit, people stopped paying their association assessments. Those associations that were bound by bulk cable contracts were all screaming and yelling, you know, we have to keep paying for this, and we're paying for units where they're not paying us. And then, of course, the question to me and my colleagues as association attorneys is, can we shut off the cable to this unit? Is it deemed a utility? Because the legislature responded, they they heard the, you know, the hue and cry from owners saying what can be done. And they said, okay, you can suspend use rights. Then it became a question of if it's bundled, is it a utility? Some cable providers did allow, you know, shutoffs to units that weren't paying. But a lot of associations at that time, when their bulk cable contracts came up for renewal, they did not renew. And they just said to people, you want cable, you get it yourself. Do it on retail. And to your point, they pay a lot more. Now we're in 2022, going into 2023. And as you know, we've got this condo safety bill in Florida. It's calling for mandatory engineering inspections, mandatory reserve funding. These, we've got huge insurance increases, sometimes upwards of 80%. So everybody's operating budgets are going up. My question, sorry, it's a long-winded question, is do you think we're going to see a trend heading back because of the potential for a large number of delinquencies in the coming years back to associations moving away from bulk contracts and just saying to owners, you got to get your own retail contract. If you can afford it, go for it.
You know, that's a very interesting question, and it's one I've really thought about a lot. I will tell you, in this past year, I've converted about half a dozen properties that did not have a bulk to a bulk. So I was seeing the opposite trend. Now moving into a potential recession or an area where people may not be able to afford their dues, it's a possibility. But on the other hand, you can look at it differently. If you're going to be increasing the dues because of insurance costs or other costs that are being passed along, if you can provide a service that people are now paying $100 for out of pocket for $30 more on the association side, at least you're showing that you're giving a lot more value, and it may help to offset those increases. So I don't think so, but I certainly don't know. And I guess it will be a case by case basis. But we also try to, you know, it's great to work with companies, again, that are flexible, that will help associations if they do need to have some turn off or turn on, you know, feature to the program, because that is a big question that is being asked a lot.
That's a significantly important point that you just made, though, of the health of the individual owner in the building, the fiscal health. Can they afford to pay for the increase in assessments? Is okay, yes, but now you can offset because you can pay less for cable because of we've got a bulk contract. I hadn't thought about it that way, but that is very interesting. But it would also be nice if there was some clarification as to whether or not, assuming we do, and hopefully we won't, but assuming we go into some sort of a recession as a result of what's going on in our marketplace here, it would be nice that if cable providers could do shutoffs to particular units when they're not paying the assessment. Because what that means is everybody else is paying for that person who's not paying to keep watching cable.
So, and actually, that's a great way to have people pay their dues. If they're going to lose their internet because they're behind in their dues, guess what? They may pay their dues before they pay a different bill because internet is so important. So there's, you know, different ways to look at it, but we certainly try to help the associations that need it by negotiating favorable terms for them.
They can go without the pool and the tennis court, but shut off their favorite program, and that may be the inducement. Again, but they're going to listen, folks, anybody listening, you need to speak to counsel, because if it's a bundled package and they don't have a phone and the only thing they have is the internet to make a call, that's going to be problematic shutting that off. So I'm putting that disclaimer out there. So I guess another question I have for you, and this comes up a lot, is who owns the wiring and for how long?
So again, believe it or not, that is negotiable. And that's something, that's another thing that people may not know to negotiate. So typically, the provider will own the fiber optics to the property and running through the property, meaning that they will maintain ownership of that. When you get to the condominium or obviously inside someone's home, that then becomes the ownership of the association. Within the building, and then inside each unit, it belongs to the individual unit owner. I have on occasion negotiated where the association actually took ownership of all the wiring at the end of the term. And they were, you know, whether or not that's going to be helpful in the future will depend on if future providers will use infrastructure that's already there from another provider, but I think they may. And I, you know, it was certainly something that was important to several of my boards, and we made that happen for them.
So that may be one of the leverage points I asked early on, Marcy, which is if an association got a large association, so it's going to be a very lucrative contract. We've got wiring we own that you might be able to use. that's yet another little carrot, perhaps, that an association can dangle in terms of getting, you know, favorable terms?
Sure, absolutely. I mean, there's just a lot of different nuances today that there just were not in the market, you know, in the past. And a lot, the providers are all more negotiable and things have changed. So if you're going to get a new infrastructure, that infrastructure obviously is very valuable. Whereas, you know, you don't really want to negotiate to keep the old coaxial wiring because who needs it? You know, you're going to want to upgrade at some point. But with new wiring, yes, that's certainly something that can be considered and sometimes is.
When you're negotiating, do you ever ask for the provider to set up a customer service center on premises? I know in some of my very large communities, providers set up one for as long as a year, a customer service center right on site where owners could come if they were having any sort of problem with their boxes, their equipment. Do you ever negotiate for that?
Absolutely. So that is something else. That is a really good point, Donna. Thank you. That is very important. And it doesn't only have to be for a large association. When you're going to a new provider and you're introducing all new equipment and new infrastructure, it is really important that the residents know how to use it in order for it to be a successful transition. So very often you will have the provider there on site, maybe one day a week for a certain period of time, certainly throughout the installation. And then we also make sure that we have customer friendly days where they will be there to, you know, show people how to use it. You want to negotiate to have home visits included, which is important. You know, somebody comes back from being away and maybe they need another lesson on how to use the new boxes. The great thing today, though, is all the technology is very similar. So if you're going to make a change from one provider to another, typically the boxes and the remote controls especially look very much like what they were used to using, which is fantastic. And also wireless technology today is terrific because it means you don't have to run wires throughout someone's unit, which makes it a great, you know, great thing as well.
Can I tell you that one of the angriest board meetings I ever attended concerned a large bulk cable contract? And we had people standing up. And one gentleman, I remember, he started screaming at the board. He wasn't a fan of the board to start with. And he said, "How, you know, you don't know what you're doing with this contract and these pricing." And they said, "Well, this contract was actually, we used a consultant." It shut him down. He had nothing else. He thought that the board had done this and the board's, and you are their safety net because this was not the board just pulling figures out of the air and, you know, trying to, you know, scramble around and figure out what to ask for. They had, like you, a cable consultant who met with them for months and sat with them and negotiated the business terms. And so I'll never forget that board meeting, Marcy.
The other thing about having a consultant is if there's a problem down the road, I've had properties come to me a year later and maybe there's something that they need some help with and they're not getting it from the provider. I have the relationship, as with other consultants, to be able to go to the top levels within those companies and get them the help that they need. I have one really sad story. It's not a funny story. It's actually a sad story. There was a pretty large association, about 1,000 units, that told me they were going to allow me to help them. And I had helped a lot of other associations within their area. And they ended up doing it themselves. The president at the time just really wanted to be the one to negotiate. And I got a call like January 2nd of this past year. And gosh, I don't even know if this is okay to say. But anyway, they called me up and they said, "Guess what? We really need your help. We want you to represent us." And I found out that the president had signed an agreement the last week of the year, had passed away 2 days later. And now they were there. They had no idea what had happened. They didn't know who to reach out to. And they couldn't hire a consultant because they had already signed the contract.
They were already locked in.
They were. And it was really, I felt terrible because I tried to help them to the extent that I could, but they were signed, you know, they had a signed agreement in place. So it was too late.
Oh, yeah. Well, not much you can do sometimes. People have to help themselves. But I did want to ask you, who pays for your services and how is it calculated? How is your fee calculated, Marcy?
So thanks for asking, because that is an area that is very important. You probably don't want to see your boards get into agreements where they're paying long-term fees to a consultant, which some consultants will ask for. I'm not saying it's wrong. I'm just saying it's not very popular. Typically, there's a door fee. And most of the time with the current larger providers, the way a consulting group gets paid, like myself, is they get a percentage of that door fee. So if the door fee, again, is $100, it's typically a 25% fee, unless it's a very large association. The great news today is because it is so competitive, if a provider brings in a new fiber optic company, very often the fiber optic company will pay a referral fee directly to the consultant, in which case, in my case, I do not take any of the door fee, if that's the case.
That's what I've thought, that at times it's the provider that's going to pay your fee.
Absolutely. And the great thing about that is then the association really gets the help for free. So yes, that is a great
but
thing.
But that's after you've beat them up. It's, you're still in the neutral position of you don't work for the provider.
I do not work for the provider at all. It's an afterthought. And the other thing is sometimes you can get help from the provider even for overseeing the project, where you can get them to put money in so that it doesn't fall entirely on the consultant or the board or the committee. Because in some projects, as you know, they're very large construction projects. And again, the provider would not be the one selecting who would help and assist with that. It would be the association that would take that money and bring in their own people to overlook what's going on.
Everything in life is negotiable. It just depends who's doing the negotiating for you. Do you have any data or just even a sense of how many communities use a telecom consultant like yourself, or as opposed to going it alone?
You know, I don't have any hard data. I will tell you that I have never been busier, and people I know that do what I do have never been busier. And I think it has a lot to do with the fact that so many communities are going to fiber optics and they recognize that they do need some help. It's not negotiating like in the past just for a price point. If I had to guess, I would probably say half, but that might be too high. Maybe it's a lot lower than that. I don't know. But certainly a lot of associations today are reaching out and want some assistance.
Well, Marcy, we're coming up on the hour. Do you have any final thoughts for our listeners about what you do, the industry in general, technology around the corner?
I think that fiber optics is the technology of today and around the corner. There's some studies out there that say by 2026, 60% of the homes in Florida will have fiber directly to the unit. So that's a pretty big number. I think that people have to understand that what you want to do is lock in the best possible deal for your community with the most flexibility. Because while these are long-term agreements, the fiber going in the ground obviously is going to sit there for a long time. And you want to be in the driver's seat as to what happens to the community as time goes by. So this is the best time ever to be doing this. If you're a community that has older infrastructure or people are not getting good service, be open to looking at what is available in the market, because it has never been more competitive. And you can lock in rates today that are substantially lower than they were a few years ago, which is an interesting thing since prices seem to be going up. The actual cable costs of these bulk programs with the internet are going down from what they were in the past.
It gets cheaper and it gets smaller. I mean, think back on our phones and our computers and everything else.
Mm-hmm. And the competitive marketplace. It really has become much more competitive. And if you want, you know, the providers want your business, and if they want it, they're going to have to negotiate for it.
Do you ever deal with individuals or just with communities?
Just with communities, starting to talk a little bit to some municipalities, because again, they are bulk users of technology, but primarily for me in particular, I don't really deal much with developers. I really prefer to be on the side of the association, whether it's condo or HOA.
Well, I want to thank you for joining us today. I personally feel like I know a lot more than when we started this episode. I'm going to actually go home and talk to my better half about our own internet services and cable and everything else. I also want to wish all our listeners a very happy holidays and a happy new year. And Marcy, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you, Donna, so much for the opportunity. It was a pleasure.
Thank you for joining us today. Don't forget to follow and rate us on your favorite podcast platform or visit takeittotheboard.com for more ways to connect.